Washington a la selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia de Nijir Dilamujian para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a una atleta de la etnia uigur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
About the shape I'm in, I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you, I might not give the answer that you want me to.
And coming up next on the archives at huffsantacruz.org, or if you are one of those ambitious listeners looking to hear us on the internet at freakradio.org, or is it freakradio.net? Sometimes I screw up the two. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the April 28th, 2022 edition. We're going to be listening in on the updates with Reggie Meisler, who's appealing the OVO, Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, to the Coastal Commission, which turned down that law 6 or 7 years ago when I appealed it. And we hope, or I do anyway, that that will happen again. And we're going to be listening in on some quick clips and quips, perhaps, more of one or the other, from the Food Now Bombs meal, which is a regular feature of this show. And who knows, we may be desperately grabbing on to some discussions at the Huff meeting, which also happened today. But I haven't quite made up my mind, and we'll see how things go. You can listen along with us if you wish.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with Reggie Meisler, who's an activist concerned with the rights of folks outside, perhaps with the general population, particularly, though, with a focus on the poorer half of the community, perhaps. He's the guy who filed the first appeal against the OVO, the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, a month or two ago now, I guess. And it got sent to the Planning Commission. He had to pay $700 to do that. And he didn't want to fork out another $700 to appeal it to the City Council. So he simply has waited until the City Council gave its expected rubber stamp to it before sending it on to the Coastal Commission, which has to approve of it, or at least not find any significant problem with the local Coastal Commission's rubber stamp, which they apparently have already given. And this won't be so easy, I don't think, because the problem is the ordinance has the same kinds of difficulties that the earlier ordinance, or I should even say the current ordinance, which is the one that's currently on the books but isn't being enforced, Rochelle Naroyan, former councilwoman Rochelle Naroyan's law, that was designed to give the police a quick way of driving anybody they wanted out of the city who lives in their vehicle, or I should say at least in their oversized van, or oversized, of course, is a nice designation to fit in with older vehicles and vehicles that many folks, their estimates of anywhere between 30 and I don't know how many hundred living in their vehicles, which I haven't counted, but that seems to be the target of these folks. These folks do seem to be the target of that effort by the City Council. Anyway, Reggie is now appealing to this ordinance directly to the full State Coastal Commission, and we talk about that, and you get to listen. Well, today is April 25th, and it's about 9:20 in the morning, and I'm talking online here with, or on phone, with Reggie Meisler, who's the original challenger of the OVO ordinance, at least along with Santa Cruz Cares. Am I right on that?
I would say you're the original challenger, but...
No, you're the one to put it in the paper.
This time around.
Yeah, well, of course, years ago. So I know you said that you're going to have a busy day today because you're going to be running around sort of acquiring the signatures of people who are joining you in this appeal of the OVO, which is the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, for those who don't know, the law that essentially bans RVs both at night and also significantly during the day. Do you want to give us a capsule description of what it is and why you're challenging it? But,
I think the very important point for people who may have heard of it a little bit but don't know exactly what it is OVO is a parking permit that is very sort of clumsily defined to target vehicles over 20 feet in length and over 7 feet in height, I want to say, and 8 feet in width. It's one of those or the other. And sort of the point of this is not to just... It's sort of a very clumsy way of targeting unhoused people who live in vehicles and making it easier to prosecute them for sort of minor offenses that they can sort of, lay on them, which normally are not easily prosecutable. And these are really, just crimes of poverty, like not having anywhere to put trash, not having anywhere to use the bathroom, things like that. And so instead of the city giving people those services, they want to sort of enhance their ability to criminalize them for not having those services.
How exactly does this enhance their ability? Do you have the specifics? Because I know I've been a little vague about, other than it's banned from midnight to 5 of those oversized vehicles, so-called oversized vehicles.
Yeah, so I guess there's two dimensions. One is the fact that it just criminalizes just the act of surviving in a vehicle. So, like, you can't park a vehicle overnight from midnight to 5 a.m., like you say, unless you have one of these permits. But then even if you have the permit, you can't park. You can only park like 12 days a month, staggered by 72 hours at a time. And so you really just cannot own an oversized vehicle, even if you're a housed resident, if you don't have a driveway, because this whole thing is applying to parking along streets.
I think you also pointed out, Reggie, that even if you have a driveway and you park the vehicle in the driveway and your grandmother comes to visit and wants to use that space to sleep in, that's a crime even without enforcement of the CSSO ordinance, the Community Services and Standards Act, which, you know, essentially supposedly isn't being enforced right now, but actually, according to the city manager, is being enforced, though I haven't heard of its any actual cases. But it says that you're not allowed to sleep or camp even in such a vehicle if it's parked on your property. Am I right on that? I think you pointed that out at one point.
Well, actually, you know, you bring up a good point. I was just speaking to Micah Posner, and, you know, he's been kind of hitting up against these laws because Stacy was living on his property, Stacy Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually derived that you can sleep in an RV in a driveway for an unknown amount of time. They might try to come after you if it's more than like 3 to 6 months, but it seems like that is actually vague in terms of their ability to enforce.
I thought it was, you know, specifically prohibited, but I guess I should go check it out. The other question I had for you as you were describing what this law does, which I think also has to do with, I think there's some more restrictions that you pointed out about where you can park even during the day. But also, have you got any sense, because you have been involved in this sort of stop the sweeps movement of homeless folks, given that there's no place for them to go, for quite a while. And do you have any sense of how many people actually live in oversized vehicles that this would impact? Or how many vehicles? How many vehicles there are that, you know, that this?
Well, the city claims that it's something like 80 people is what this will impact. But I think other estimates I've heard is more like 300. So,
do you have any?
It's hard to know the exact numbers because obviously their categorization hits more than RVs. It can hit some cargo vans that are, like, particularly long, but other cargo vans it won't hit. So, you know, for instance, Kevin's van is, like, 18 feet in length, so just barely sort of misses that mark.
Kevin is the guy that you attempted to appeal the planning commission's ruling to the city council, and you were turned down, even though he is indigent, and he was trying to make an indigent appeal and avoid the $700 cost. Instead, it got put on the agenda, compliments of Councilmember Renee Golder, who didn't have to pay a penny, as far as I remember.
Yeah, that's right.
So you don't have any real specific sense of how many vehicles are impacted by this, in terms of your own observation or the specific accounts of people that have gone around? Because I know there were some people who were kind of nomading it up and trying to help out folks who were being told move or else, or, you know, that sort of thing. That was almost a year ago or more.
Mm-hmm.
But no stats at this point, particularly that you're talking about.
No, nothing that, you know, we could sort of point to as like the absolute truth, you know.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other issue for me, because you're right, I did appeal this to, you know, to the Coastal Commission 6 years ago or something, and they found, based largely on two considerations that, as I remember it, that this was not something they could rubber stamp the older law, the current law that's actually still on the books but isn't enforced, the nighttime ban on RVs in Santa Cruz, the Richelle Noroyan law, because it there were no shelter facilities or storage facilities or parking facilities for such vehicles that they could really point to. I mean, the assistant city manager did point to, you can park two vehicles in a church property, or three vehicles and two in a business parking lot. But they had no specifics that the government had actually provided for, and there were no indications of really open areas that they had. And they didn't come back with any such areas for the last 6 years, which they could have done in order to presumably enforce the old law, which, you know, is still on the books, still passed, and hasn't really been challenged in the courts. So, you know, it's interesting that that's the case. But I guess the question I have is, and I've been trying to get answers for the last year for this one from different people, including the Association of Faith Communities, which runs these services supposedly and gets a chunk of money for it from somewhere. I don't know. I guess they don't get it from the city, but they may get it from the county or the state. I don't know. Maybe you do. How many vehicles actually are provided with storage places during the night, albeit no doubt with restrictions that may exclude poor people or people who want to be able to be treated like ordinary adult human beings and not as kids, you know, prisoners or people who have restricted rights. Do you have any sense of the storage spots, the number?
Not at all, you know, and I don't even know, you know, the city claims that it's already stood up in the last meeting. When the city council review happened for OVO, they claimed that they had open spots and safe parking, but I don't know where these are. Like, you know, these are just the mysterious, unspecified locations. I mean, and if I don't know where they are, I don't know how an unhoused person with worse access to the internet and sort of, you know, more difficult ability to navigate this stuff, because maybe they're not used to it. I don't know how they would figure out where to go.
I do know that I saw, and I'm trying to remember whether it was in a staff report or saw it in a presentation at a city council meeting, there were several lots mentioned by number that were either supposedly open for use, and I didn't write them down at the time to my chagrin. You know, I'm sorry about that. But I think maybe I'll do it today is put in a Public Records Act request to find out exactly what spaces are available, because I think that is a key issue once you're, you know, doing your final appeal. And this really is the final appeal you're working on to the Coastal Commission. Maybe ACLU will also do it, because do you have any sense that they're going to be doing pursuing their appeal?
So I'm glad about that, because it was unclear kind of in the beginning. But I think I have an argument, and you can kind of maybe bleep this out or whatever, but I do have an argument that I'm very confident.
Back on the recording again. I think it's really important, as I said, to pay attention to what at least several members of the Coastal Commission, and it turned out that persuaded 11 of them. Only one was not the chair in the last 2016 hearing that they had, to say, no, we're not going to rubber stamp this, is to have specifically on a certain date as of 5 days before the Coastal Commission, because they may come in with some new stuff. The city manager may suddenly say, see, we suddenly required 17 new spaces right here, and point out that we've attempted to get this information and they've kept it from us, and what they are now trying to tell you is that it exists, but we have made repeated and regular requests, and I suggest you also make a request or that I do, or that somebody do it, whoever wants to get into this, that there be not just a request of existing spaces, that if there are any new spaces acquired, these be sent forward and forwarded to us and let us know. The problem, however, with that is that what the city administrator has told me, I've requested that she, for every city council meeting, she send me an unredacted copy of all the claims, for example. You can't get the claims unless you ask for them, because they somehow suggest it's a privacy issue. It's not. It's a public record. And so she's refused to do this. She said, you have to put in an individual request every single time for every single meeting. And I said, even though you know that I'll be making this request, and even though you regularly will inform people, for example, send out the agendas of, you know, for every different commissions in advance, they don't have to make individual requests. And you have this information. It's not like the staff has to run to get information. It is sent out to all the council members, you know, the full unredacted claims that people are making. And these are significant. This is sort of a side issue. We're talking about the OVO, but this has to do with any time an individual sues the city, they have to precede it with a claim against the city. And it's not like we're trying to give, you know, a lawyer's a boon for all these lawsuits, but rather often it's the case, or at least it's sometimes the case, that there are police abuses that people want to there's no other way to bring things to the community's attention than to sue the city, or at least to make a claim against the city and raise the issue. And then maybe if they can find an attorney, sue the city, which is sometimes quite hard to do in Santa Cruz. Police and even so-called liberals critical of police often are very tight with the existing power structure or part of it. So that can be a power, a problem I've found. So again, I can't guarantee that I'll be doing it. So I hope that either the ACLU or you or Santa Cruz Cares regularly puts in, like, as a matter of just, it's a very sort of simple template. Currently, I'd like to send me a copy of any spaces that have currently are available for parking within the in the city of Santa Cruz, or even in the county of Santa Cruz, that are relevant to this whole coastal zone situation, which you have, and then for the next such public record, you say, since the last Public Records Act request I made, you know, anything new, and then you can bring it to the Coastal Commission if they show up with lots of sudden, wonderful storage spaces that will, you know, might tend to counter your argument that there isn't adequate storage for this stuff, which was more important. I know it's not your argument. Your argument is a broader one, which has to do with the failure of the city to actually really give a shit about any of this stuff, and that if they wanted to make provisions, they could have for a long time, and there are much better ways to deal with it. That's what I think what Santa Cruz Cares is actually talking about. But the Coastal Commission is only concerned with meeting the requirements of the Coastal Commission, and therefore I tend to want to build upon what they have said in the past, which is, one, where's the storage, and two, where's the crime wave that indicates you suddenly want to treat RV owners who are so-called of oversized RVs as potential criminals. But lest we get too wrapped up in the chitter-chatter here, let's take a musical break.
I got a little bitty gun on the table, right by my little bitty bed. Though it's really very cute, how you hold a thing to shoot is too much for my little bitty head. I love my little bitty pistol, it's the pride of my little bitty room. And the gun shoots a little bitty bullets when the little bitty gun goes boom. How I love my husband, he takes care of me, he'll take care of all of you, just you wait and see. When he has to go away, nights are long and black, if the bad man comes around, I'll shoot his lights out, Jack. I've got a little bitty gun on the table, right by my little bitty bed. Oh, it's really very cute how you hold it in the shoot. Tis too much for my little bitty head. I love my little bitty pistol. It's the pride of my little bitty bull. And the gun shoots a little bitty bullets when the little bitty gun goes boom. Now we're in the White House. Won't we dance till dawn? Turning loose some welfare folks on the White House lawn. You bring your little pistol, I'll bring my pistol too. We'll fire our pistols at their feet. They'll dance for me and you. I've got a little bitty gun on the table, right by my little bitty bed. Though it's really very cute how you hold a thing to shoot. It's too much for my little bitty head. I love my little bitty pistol. It's the pride of my little bitty room. And the gun shoots a little bitty bullets when the little bitty gun goes boom. When the little bitty gun goes boom.
But the Coastal Commission is only concerned with meeting the requirements of the Coastal Commission. And therefore, I tend to want to build upon what they have said in the past, which is, one, where's the storage? And two, where's the crime wave that indicates you suddenly want to treat RV owners who are so-called of oversized RVs as potential criminals? Do you have real evidence of that? And simply, claims about complaints or even checks or even calls for service is the right word. They're big on the calls for service documentation as somehow being evidence that there's criminal behavior. It's not. I mean, of course, it's not even criminal behavior until it's taken to court, prosecuted, and you're convicted. And so they almost never will present you with those statistics, even as the city council willingly bends over for every new police measure that comes up, unless challenged as it was recently by the ACLU in the issue of the folks who are running around giving tickets to OVOs and other people in their vehicles. You know, the volunteer was at Deborah Elston's goon squad that runs around giving citations to people who can't afford them, can't pay for the rising gas prices to move them. So, having made my speech here, tomorrow, as we make this recording, is the Tuesday City Council meeting, and it's supposed to be the first council meeting that's actually open to the public, sort of. They'll probably have, you know, very limited seatage and standage, if you will, in the council chambers. But it's supposed to be open as well as Zooming. Are you planning to go to this meeting?
The city council meeting? I don't know what's on the agenda. I suppose if there's something interesting on the agenda, I might go.
The two things I've noticed are, one is in the evening there is this ratification of the military equipment that the police department has. They have... the only thing, apparently, that I didn't get to the 2 Mondays ago, I think it was, the police chief, the acting police chief, gave a Zoomed discussion of that he was required to do by state law of what kind of military equipment they had. The only thing they acknowledged having was, apparently, the Bearcat, which is, of course, an armored vehicle, for those who don't know, which they picked up, which Vogel, former police chief, picked up very in a sort of a slimy, slippery move without really letting people know about it. And then when he did, he said, you have to immediately take it because the grant is going to run out in a few weeks. You know, I mean, that was his deal. That was around the same time that it was revealed that he had an ICE agent with a desk in his police department. That was an interesting revelation. I think he resigned sometime after that. But it was never, when I sought Mills, that was the police chief who replaced him, for those who don't know, his, you know, specifics on, I wanted to get the records of all ICE communications, they wouldn't send them. So that's, I mean, we don't get this information is the problem whenever you're trying to fight this kind of secrecy and lack of accountability. But that's on the agenda tomorrow night. I think it's right after the oral communications period at 6 or 6:30. And, of course, there's also the second reading of the public meetings ordinance, which you're familiar with probably, which has to do with it. It actually does not really make a lot of changes in the existing permit, and which makes me think it's more like a cover and a sort of to the right-wing conservative element of the community in the on the west side and in other areas of the city.
Because, well, Justin Cummings called out what it did, basically.
Go ahead.
He asked the question that was the pertinent question that made them squirm a little bit, which was, how is this different? Like, you know, Udot Bombs gets a permit, they don't get a permit. You know, what changes if they don't get a permit under this? And they said, well, we can prosecute them because it's a misdemeanor instead of an infraction. And I think that's kind of like what...
Your point is well taken. I think, yeah, that's something that I'm... I guess I've noticed it, but I've sort of a I don't know if it's in the, I guess he what Cummings pointed out and Attorney Condotti, the city attorney, confirmed that this was a change from the existing law, because I mean what I've noticed is they could level up to $1,000 fine for an infraction, I think, unless they've changed the rules on that. Plus, that adds, there's court costs added too. If they really wanted to do that with Food Not Bombs, and they could send in police to enforce the infraction, even though it's not a jailing offense, you can jail someone if they're doing a repeated infraction under the city's code, although you shouldn't be able to do it under the state law. But no one, as far as I know, has ever taken it that far. And who wants to? You know, our public defenders do not want to disturb their good relations with the district attorneys, has been my concern or my suspicion about this. But in any case, it's... the main issue that I noticed was a minor one, which was a 75. They actually increased the number of people that you have to have in order to require a permit from 50 to 75. I suppose that's a so-called liberalization. But the main thing I noticed also is that it isn't, other than if you say is accurate, I imagine it is if you've looked it over, that there's this additional immediate possible prosecution for, for a misdemeanor, is that this hasn't really been, it hasn't been used throughout all the protests, although admittedly there haven't been too many in the last year, but 2 years ago there were massive protests actually involving direct confrontation with the police department's fencing policies around both Food Not Bombs, Lot 27, next to the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union, and also the town clock area, which Food Not Bombs removed the Black Lives Matter protesters removed those fences, and there was no prosecution of people for either doing that or having no permits for any of those. I assume they didn't have a permit. I would be surprised if they did. But in other words, it hasn't been used in the most rampant, visible, and high profile, even illegally acting, if justly acting, protests. So I'm wondering, is this just sort of a shout-out in, see, we're doing this for you, see, we're passing all these laws? Does it really have anything to do with real enforcement? What's your sense of that?
Well, I think it does. I think it's, Kathy Bronson, who presented this, has been very explicitly going after Food Not Bombs.
The assistant city attorney, yeah.
And publicly. And it just feels like this is the next sort of, you know, shot across the bow of, like, you know, get in line or, you know, we're going to throw you in jail or something like that.
I hear that, except that I'm wondering why she didn't follow up her letter by sending in the police. I mean, as I said,
I guess she thinks that she needs this kind of ordinance change in order to stick the police on him.
See, that's the question. I don't know if that's the case, but maybe it is. And anyway, that's one of the items on the agenda, along with the military equipment. I think that comes a little bit before the oral communications period. I think there's also something else. I think they're also extending their right to do hybrid. I don't know if it's hybrid or even if they want. I'm not sure about this, but they may be extending their right to do exclusive Zoomed meetings instead of requiring them to be at least hybrid or open to the public. But I don't know. I'm not entirely clear about that. So anyway, that's what's on the agenda for anybody listening. Of course, everybody would know that because I'll be playing this on Thursday and city council meeting will have come and gone. But what you're going to be going out getting signatures today for this appeal. And I guess that the question I have for you is what is the final deadline for signing on to the different appeals that are being done, yours and maybe the ACLU's if it's being done? How can you be reached, or how can either of these groups be reached? And what's the drop dead point at which they can't go, they have to do it by?
Well, honestly, it's tough. I wouldn't want to try to take on many more appellants because I just don't think we're going to have the time to, like, pick up new appellants at this point and then deliver it. So, I mean, if someone can, like, get me their letter, mailing address, phone number, and can meet with me by, like, Thursday with all of that.
But what is the deadline for the actual letters into the Coastal Commission? If you are, I take it anybody can write a letter into the Coastal Commission, right? You don't need to be an appellant to do that. Or am I wrong about that?
Well, there may be an appeal meeting following this appeal. And in that case, someone can write a public comment. But I think in order to write a public comment, you might also even need to have been personally affected or
made a statement at city council.
Yeah, I think if you made a statement, right.
Yeah. You might want to check on that because that could be important for, you know, for people who want to say something about it. I can do that. Hopefully, I'll do that too. Although a lot of these things drop off and I don't do them. I know that the local Coastal Commission staff can and often does give you accurate information about this. Although they're not on your side. You got to be aware of this. Anybody listening to this, and I think you as well, Reggie, probably. Got to know that the Coastal Commission in the past, not just the local staff, who are amiable enough and can be helpful in some ways, they argued that the Coastal Commission's, that this OVO act by the City Council does meet the standards of the Coastal Commission. And not only did they say that, but the Coastal Commission state staff said that. It took the Coastal Commission's full 12 members, 11 of them, to say, no, it doesn't. Sorry, you're wrong about that. And also they kind of chided the staff for not coming up with some real standards that could be used instead of having to do all this on a case-by-case basis. And I don't think they ever did. And, in fact, another additional concern that I guess that the city is going to have when they argue this and that you might want to bring up if you're doing an argument is that there was a law passed, you know, strengthening the social justice aspect of this. You're probably aware of this in 2019 or 2020 that required the Coastal Commission to look at these issues specifically, which wasn't the case in 2016, although apparently it was the case in the minds of 11, or at least several of the commissioners of that 11-member majority.
Hmm. Yeah, if you could send me some of that stuff, maybe I can...
I will try to make at least a note. Maybe I can pay attention to my own notes. Let's see here. And we can get something to you.
Yeah, I'm getting pinged a lot by work. I gotta go. But yeah, if you have anything else that you want to sort of talk about, just shoot me an email or something.
I will, and I will try to catch you later in the week before the Thursday meeting. If you have time, we can talk some more. I know you're busy. And if you don't, then that'll be that.
Okay, cool.
Hey, thank you, Reggie.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. So it is musical break time, but before we hit the music, should mention that the last number was called Little Bitty Gun, and it was, again, from the stuff I've been playing throughout the last show, Tom Paxton's Bulletin. We interrupt this record, and here's another one from Tom. This one is called The Mail Will Go Through.
Yes, sir, modern life is scary. It's sure tough on me and E. It's hard to count on anything these days. But when things get too hairy with their insecurity, you can count on the post office, Lord be praised. They say we'll all be cinders in the end.
In the end.
But there's one bright hope on which we may depend.
May depend.
They can go and drop the big one, but the mail will go through. That's a promise to you that the mail will go through. There'll be no one left to read it, but the mail will go through. What a wonderful change that will be. The announcement was so welcome, it allayed our deepest fears. It was met with heartfelt cheers as we sank a couple beers. We can write to all our loved ones saying we're no longer here, and the mail will go through.
Rain or shine,
they can go and drop the big one, but the mail will go through. That's a promise to you that the mail will go through. There'll be no one left to read it, but the mail will go through. What a wonderful change that will be. Final war is over and it's been a great success. We've been powdered more or less. Come the mailman expects, he'll come sifting through the ashes till he finds the right address. And the mail will go through.
They can
go and drop the big one, but the mail will go through. That's a promise to you that the mail will go through. There'll be no one left to read it, but the mail will go through. What a wonderful change that will be. Future can't be all bad, there's a lot you've gotta like. If they vaporize your bike, you can take a little hike and get your letter in the chute between the first and second strike. And the mail will go through.
They can go and drop the big one,
but the mail will go through. That's a promise to you that the mail will go through. There'll be no one left to read it, but the mail will go through. What a wonderful change that will be. What a wonderful change that will be.
And these anti-war tunes maybe, hopefully, will be becoming more popular. That, of course, was The Mail Will Go Through. Let's wander on over to the, I guess the town clock is where Food Not Bombs is customarily feeding these days. Although the city just did the second reading of an ordinance that criminalizes them unless they get a permit and allows for the jailing of people who engage in, quote, their free speech demonstration with Food Not Bombs, which is what Food Not Bombs considers its meal to be, a free speech event, as well as providing free food. Anyway, let's catch some of the conversations in and around the clock, some of which I generated. So the Tuesday City Council meeting is something I'll be talking about more likely on Sunday. It's hopeful I will have more enthusiasm for it then and maybe be better educated on it as well, although it's kind of painful for me to try to parse the particulars of these particular council meetings when they really are essentially rubber stampings of staff actions, which I think hurt the community and don't help it, at least particularly the poor and unhoused community. But in the meantime, here's a story from Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's titled, Residents Vent Anger at Grand Rapids City Leaders Over Officer Killing Patrick Loyoya. Not sure if I have his name right. We'll be able to hear, actually, mainstream media talking about it, too. But here's what the story writes. Dozens of community members vented their anger at city leaders Tuesday evening, and this is dated again April 13th, over the killing of a 26-year-old man by a Grand Rapids police officer, and they're not telling you who, of course, the police officer is, with many saying elected leaders could have done more to prevent the death. I first want to say one thing. We told you so, Allie Bates, chairman of the Royal Black Panther Party Grand Rapids, told Grand Rapids city commissioners on Tuesday. So many local activists like myself came into these meetings injured, traumatized, and brutalized by the Grand Rapids Police Department warning you of the realities of ignoring police violence. At the Tuesday, April 12th meeting of the Grand Rapids City Commissioners, many called on elected officials to release the name of the officer that killed Patrick Loyoya on April 4th and arrest him. City officials have only said the officer is white and began with the department in 2015. About 100 protesters marched to the meeting, the first since Loyoya's death, demanding justice. As of 10 p.m., people continued to give public comment, with many delivering impassioned remarks. Public comment began around 7:30 p.m. Many said city leaders were as responsible for Loyoya's death as the officer who shot him. The Grand Rapids Police Department hasn't yet released footage of the incident. Police Chief Eric Winstrom announced early Tuesday he planned to release the footage Wednesday, more than a week after the killing. Earlier that day, city staff placed concrete barriers around the Grand Rapids Police Department headquarters. It's very apparent that the GRPD and the city knows that the video will show the truth, one person told commissioners. Today, the city had barricades placed around the outside of the police station and areas along downtown. This is essentially an admission of guilt. Patrick Loyoya's father, Peter Loyoya, through an interpreter, previously said he had seen video of the incident, and it shows the officer shooting his son in the back of the head. Grand Rapids police have not yet revealed what the video shows, so MLive, that's writing this story, cannot verify the claim. This is a war that has lasted 400 years and spans every continent on the planet, another person told commissioners. My ancestors are littered across the Atlantic Ocean, and now Patrick Loyoya lies dead in the street. Not strange fruit hanging from trees, but a discarded husk under the foot of a police officer. You should all be ashamed of yourselves. Do better. In addition to releasing the unedited footage, some called on City Manager Mark Washington and commissioners to resign. Some asked to allow an external autopsy. The deadly shooting happened around 8:10 a.m. April 4th, when the officer, according to police, conducted a traffic stop on a vehicle near Griggs Street Southeast and Nelson Avenue. Police have given few details about the officer involved, but said the officer is white and joined the department in 2015, as mentioned before. GRPD officials said last week that what circumstances led to the traffic stop aren't clear, but that the vehicle had a license plate that wasn't registered to it. Loyoya, who was the driver, exited the vehicle and interacted with the officer. Police said he began to flee when he learned he was about to be arrested. A fight ensued between Officer and Leoya, according to the police, I would imagine, but it doesn't say that, and the officer fired his weapon, killing Leoya. The chief previously said the fight is believed to have lasted around 90 seconds to 2 minutes. Peter Leoya, Patrick's father, disputes that the April 4th shooting started with a traffic stop. He said his son was pulled over to the curb because his car was making noise and that at some point a cruiser pulled up behind the car. And here's a few these are videos, but we're going to look at hear the audio of these videos. Let's see if we can do that. Let's see here. Here we go.
But at the end of the day, it cannot take a black man being executed in our streets in broad daylight for the city commission to notice that something is wrong. We have had people that work for the city tell us that they know that the Grand Rapids Police Department is racist. And what have they done since then?
Nothing!
When we march to the commissioners, I want everybody to raise...
And this is... one moment. Olabani Olantundi, Royal Black Panther Party, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Use their voices, okay? It can't only be us on the front lines speaking up. Use your First Amendment, okay? Use it. And that's our intention today. We're here to send a message.
And there are about, it looks like, several hundred people, some masked, some without masks, many of them in black. And the racial mix is mixed, white and black and brown. It's a little hard to tell with the small picture.
I have a dream!
I have a dream! I'm a Latino, and I come here because I feel so...
This is Dana Montgomery speaking inside some venue. Looks like could be the city commission, which is perhaps their version of the city council. It could be a police commission, not sure.
Encouraged by my community members to hope that it's not me on the street, that's not my kids, that it's not my kids' kids, that it's not my brother or my sister or my dad or my mom. And that's a horrible thought to have. That I can't even go outside and use my degree for something without worrying about getting pulled over and shot execution style on the ground with my head like this? For what reason? Am I a threat to you?
And he lies on the ground.
So I choose to educate myself. I choose to educate myself to hope that people like you aren't empowered.
And I don't know how any of y'all can sit here,
Dana Montgomery,
consciously and not be thoroughly disgusted with yourselves. Patrick Leoya was 26 years old. He was a father to two young daughters. He was a sibling. He was a sibling to five younger siblings. He was the oldest. He was a friend. He was a friend to many. And people who are sitting here right now, and how can y'all sit here stoically when a man lost his life?
I just want to note that 30 individuals...
Betsy Lopez Wagner.
What you have given us. We've given you our names. Our names. We want to know the name of the killer.
We're about to release one of the most horrific videos
Robert
not only
Womack.
The city, the nation will ever see. Ben Crump is not here for no reason. And that doesn't mean all the police are bad in the world, because that always gets edited. It can't get edited today. But you got some bad tomatoes and a coat of blue meant you protect them. and it has to stop.
And here's a longer video, and we'll play some of the audio out in the street. I'm not sure if it's before or after. It's described as a protester march in downtown Grand Rapids.
Peace. No peace! Fuck these racist ass police! Fuck them! No peace! No peace! No peace!
In my Buffalo shop!
No peace!
No peace! Stop! Revolution!
No peace! Stop the revolution!
It's hard for me to understand that, so probably hard for you out there to understand it, too. I think it's Black Lives Matter that's being shouted, as well as No Justice, No Peace.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
Justice!
By any means necessary!
Justice!
By any means necessary!
And here's a story from April 13th. Father of man killed in Grand Rapids police shooting calls for accountability, community peace, by John Tennyson of MLive.com, or Tennyson at MLive.com. Grand Rapids, Michigan, the father of man who died in a Grand Rapids officer shooting is calling for police accountability, but also wants community peace. Peter Leoya, whose family came to the United States from the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2014, spoke to MLive through an interpreter Friday, April 8th. He plans to attend a march scheduled on behalf of his son on Saturday afternoon, probably already did. I want it to be a peaceful protest, said Peter Leoya of Lansing. I don't want anything to be broken or anyone to be hurt. Leoya's son, 26-year-old Patrick Leoya, died about 8:10 a.m. Monday, April 4th, after what police described, we've heard about this before, as a traffic stop. Grand Rapids Police Chief Eric Winstrom on Friday released a statement saying he was committed to releasing at least some of the police video of the incident by noon on Friday, April 15th. Leoya, an interpreter, the father and the interpreter, Israel Siku, said they already have been shown a portion of the cruiser Damcash video, and they don't believe their shooting was justified. State police, tasked to investigate the shooting, showed them the video Wednesday. Me personally, I want first justice to be done for Patrick, the father said. I want the video to be released and everyone to see the video. I am the parent. What has happened to me because Patrick has been killed? I don't want another parent to go through what I went through, he said. Peter Leola said he thinks police have been able to shield the officer from public scrutiny so far, while his son wasn't afforded the same opportunity. He wants the officer's name released. Until now, nobody knows who he is. I would like the public to know who he is. He said Patrick Leola was his firstborn, had a long life ahead of him. His father described the son as someone with a big heart, worked hard, came from Africa, knew that here in America we came for peace, we came for protection, but there was no safety here for Patrick. And most of this I've read to you before from other accounts. Let's see if I can find this video. Kent County Prosecutor Chris Becker asked police not to release any video until the state police complete their investigation. We don't want to get people riled up, see? On Friday, Becker said he would respect Winstrom's decision. Oh, it's up to Winstrom, I guess. So Becker can... So it looks like Becker, even though he doesn't want the video released, is respecting the Kent County Commissioner, Robert Well, let's see. Winstrom is the police chief. Let's see if I can find if the video was ever released, because all this was back on April 13th, and here we are at the 28th of April.
Growing calls for justice as demonstrators in Grand Rapids demand the arrest and termination of the still unnamed police officer who shot 26-year-old Patrick Leoya. Standing side by side with Leoya's family, family attorney Ben Crump calling the shooting excessive use of force.
That's Ben Crump.
Dash cam, police body camera, and cell phone video released Wednesday by law enforcement capturing the deadly encounter on April 4th. Authorities say the unidentified officer pulled Leoya over because the plate on the car wasn't registered to the vehicle. In the video, Leoya gets out, eventually tries to run. He's also seen fighting and wrestling to get to the officer's taser after it was deployed. After demands for Leoya to release the taser and to stop fighting, the struggle ends with the officer on top of him, drawing his gun and shooting Leoya in the head. The body camera at one point stops recording.
That's the police chief talking, Winstrom.
Leoya's family says he came to this country from Democratic Republic of the Congo. They believe he was confused and terrified during the encounter. And authorities say they haven't publicly identified the officer, a 7-year veteran of the force, because he hasn't been charged. Now, once the investigation is complete, a prosecutor will then take a look at the case and decide whether charges will be filed against the officer. I'm Morgan Norwood, ABC News, Los Angeles.
So it sounds like in Michigan, officers have special privileges. If anybody else shot somebody, they're... or was accused of shooting someone, and was caught on camera shooting somebody, their name would be released in the media immediately. It still apparently wasn't released as of April 14th. And the latest story on April 25th.
You're watching 13 on Your Side.
Good evening, West Michigan. Thank you for joining us tonight. It's been nearly 3 weeks since 26-year-old Patrick Leoya was shot and killed by a GRPD officer. Since then, the community has continued to demand justice. Tonight, those calls continued. 13 on Your Side's Justin Bachman was in downtown Grand Rapids as protesters gathered. Good evening, Justin.
Good evening, Elena. The crowd tonight was smaller in comparison to what we've seen in the past few weekends, especially last Saturday, but the message stayed the same. Protesters want the name of the officer released, and they want justice for Patrick Leoya.
I would say it's community unity. This is what community looks like they chant.
Saturday's demonstration didn't start with a march. It started with a cookout, where the whole community was invited.
Yeah, it feels friendly. It feels welcoming. You see, everybody feels comfortable. Everybody, like, regardless, it's really homeless people coming up here and getting some of the food, people that don't have nowhere to go, people that didn't know where their next meal was going to come. And so it's good to see that this is offered here.
One day after his funeral, people came together to celebrate a good time in honor of Patrick Leoya's life.
Well, it's so easy to spread negativity. It's so easy to be negative. It's not as easy to stay positive. And so it's good just because this is what the community needs.
After 3 hours and a meal, the crowd took to the street.
I told Patrick's mom that I wouldn't stop protesting, and I'm here. Yesterday when I actually left the funeral, I was here in the rain with a couple other activists here, and we were here in the rain. So rain, sleet, snow, whatever it is, we'll be out here. It'll be people out here for sure.
DeAndre Jones is a community activist. He believes more events like Saturday night will lead to change for other issues in the community as well.
There's been a lot of shootings here in our community ever since Patrick got killed, so we need to kind of sim those down. And the way to do that is unity. To do that is ending beef and stuff like that. So, you know, step by step.
Tomorrow at 1, there is another gathering, this one with the intention of healing, scheduled in the Boston Square neighborhood where Patrick was killed.
All right, thank you very much, Justin. Yesterday, hundreds gathered at the Renaissance Church of God in Christ to lay Patrick Liuya to rest. Many stood up to speak at the funeral, including attorney Ben Crump and civil rights activist and Reverend Al Sharpton. As Sharpton gave the eulogy for Patrick, one message was clear. They want justice.
Is this the Michigan where just not long ago you would not convict men that threatened to kidnap the governor? Now you're going to protect the name of a policeman that shot somebody in the back of the head? Is this Michigan 2022 or Mississippi 1952?
When Sharpton spoke with media after the funeral, he said withholding the officer's name sets a bad national precedent. He also called for the U.S. Department of Justice to conduct a civil rights investigation into Patrick's death. As of now, Michigan State Police are still investigating Patrick Liuya's death and the moments leading up to it. A statement released yesterday says detectives are taking every measure to ensure all evidence and facts are accurately collected and documented. Plus, gathering all facts and documenting every piece of evidence takes time, and we appreciate the patience of the community as we work to conduct a thorough and complete investigation.
It takes a lot of time to figure out who the cop was on camera who shot Patrick Liuya. That's quite a big one to swallow, and the news media can actually pass that on with a straight face. I guess it says something about how cozy the news media is with the cops there. But attached to this video, there is a story that reads like this. After weeks of community pressure to release the name of the officer captured on cell phone video shooting and killing Patrick Liuya during a traffic stop, the Grand Rapids police chief has confirmed his name. Christopher Schurr, S-C-H-U-R-R, Schurr, was the officer involved, GRPD Chief Eric Winstrom said Monday afternoon. Schurr has been with the force since 2015. Winstrom said he's releasing the officer's name in the interest of transparency. Gee, only 3 weeks after it happened. To reduce ongoing speculation and to avoid any further confusion. Officer Schurr remains on administrative leave. He has been stripped of his police powers until the conclusion of the Michigan State Police investigation into potential criminal charges. Once MSP's investigation is complete, their findings will be given to the Kent County Prosecutor's Office for the next steps in the investigation. GRPD has also launched an internal affairs investigation to determine whether all applicable departmental policies were followed. And 13 on Your Side, I guess that's a local organization, has filed Public Records Act requests to learn more about this officer's background. Authorities recently released several angles of video that capture the incident, body-worn camera, in-car video, a neighbor's doorbell video, and cell phone video the passenger of Liuya's car recorded. That cell phone video captures the moment Schurr shoots Liuya. After Liuya's death, community members have been gathering daily to protest the actions of the GRPD officer and to demand justice. And that's probably the reason that these videos are finally being released. An independent autopsy report showed that Liuya was shot in the back of the head during the traffic stop. The decision to not release Schurr's name immediately led to a backlash from Liuya family, community members, and national leaders. As we have heard, of course it should. So here's another story that hopefully will not be repeated in Santa Cruz, or maybe it already has. It's from Lakeland, Florida. Eric Glasser is reporting, and it's from Channel 10 in Tampa Bay, Florida. Downtown Lakewood hiring armed security to address panhandling and other issues. The Lakeland Downtown Development Authority, that's like our downtown association probably, in Santa Cruz, will pay $8,000 per month for an armed guard through a company called Signal 88 Security. Businesses near downtown Lakeland are about to get an armed private security guard starting May 1st. The Lakeland Downtown Development Authority says it's hiring the patrol to address what it calls an ongoing problem with panhandling and other non-desirable behaviors in and around Munn Park. Of course, for me, over-policing is a very undesirable behavior, but they're not asking me. The six-month trial idea has upset some people since many of the spaces where panhandling occurs are public property, like sidewalks that local restaurants now use for, you got it, outside dining. You know, just take a look at Santa Cruz with the huge seizure of space by restaurants. And sometimes it escalates because that person doesn't want to leave, and they say they know their rights, and they get into an altercation. The authority's executive director, Julie Townsend, explained, "We don't want the business owners or, frankly, any of their employees to have to deal with that kind of confrontation." But some who stay in the park say it's a solution in search of a problem and are concerned about being intimidated on public property. Of course, if there's going to be a ruckus, they have to separate it, but don't use force. A man who identified himself as Miles said, "Use of force only exacerbates the situation. Business owners and property owners will be given a number they can call to contact the security guard if needed. Lakeland police could also be called to file charges," they say, if it rises to that level. Well, it's past due time for a musical break, so here we go.
I never really knew you. I was a couple of years too young. By the time I came of age, the song of your life was sung. From the hills of Oklahoma to the North Atlantic seas, from the cries of the hungry children to the eyes of the deportees. They could take away your money, they could take away your land, drive you out on the endless highway, leave you out on the desert sand. They could take the food from your hungry mouth and lock you in the hole, but they couldn't take the music from your soul. No, they couldn't take the music from your soul. Just another scruffy Okie, just a Dust Bowl refugee, heading on out to California, a little bit low on the do-re-mi. And everywhere you wandered, you saw poor folks treated wrong, and you made those poor folks your whole life, and you made your life a song. They could take away your money, they could take away your land, drive you out on the endless highway, leave you out on the desert sand. They could take the food from your hungry mouth and lock you in the hole, but they couldn't take the music from your soul. No, they couldn't take the music from your soul. Called you a dangerous radical, called you a rabid red, but it never really mattered, all the stupid things they said. All those lies and all those liars are all over the hill and gone, while your songs are still here singing and still rolling you on. They could take away your money, they could take away your land, drive you out on the endless highway, leave you out on the desert sand. They could take the food from your hungry mouth and lock you in the hole, but they couldn't take the music from your soul. They couldn't take the music from your soul.
And this land was made for you and me.
And that was Tom Paxton singing "They Couldn't Take the Music." Doesn't say who he's talking about, but I think that last line, "This land was made for you and me," kind of gives it away. Sounds like it's Woody Guthrie that they're talking about. So now let's go to the town clock, where I chatted with some folks some days back, a few days back actually, April 25th, and we join up. So I'm down here at the Food Hop Arms meal. Greetings. And we have a Parks and Recreation sign here that says service work is scheduled structure of the town clerk on the 28th. That's next Wednesday. And actually, that's today. That's Thursday. But more. Wow, coming up. 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. They're going to close it again. Not sure what kind of work they're actually doing. It's a sunny day. A lot of folks. But folks at Food Now Bombs just moved across the street back to the old location where they were serving food 2 days a week until the COVID crisis, and then began serving every day, and moved to the center of the area so they could be more visible and also not interfere with the folks who were encamped next to the post office before they were driven away by the ever-friendly Andy Mills, you know, the guy who likes to take a knee with African-Americans in favor of Black Lives Matter, but not deal with any racial problems inside the actual police department and how they're treating the community outside, particularly the poor and homeless community, both black, white, and otherwise. At least that was my experience in communications I had with Chief Mills. Hanging about and in line. And the food smells good. It's April 25th.
Saying about like New Orleans, be good or go home.
Pretty simple. It's also an old saying in Chicago.
Chicago is mind your own damn business.
I see.
And that's how you survive in Chicago.
How long have you been in the area yourself?
8 months, 9 months.
And generally, no problems with cops or deputies?
Not at all. Not at all.
And you do that by keeping a low profile? Or is that...
No, I think I follow the law, actually. I color within the lines, what they... I don't have too many bad habits. I don't have I don't jeopardize myself to be able to detain me. Actually,
do you get much contact with them?
Not at all.
And is it they see you and they know you? They say, "Hey, good to see you."
They say nothing. I'm 62 years old. They leave me alone. I don't drink, so I'm never public in tax. I don't cuss. I don't steal. I don't panhandle, so they got nothing to talk to me about.
And you don't sleep in the city limits, I assume, otherwise you'd be...
I'm in SoCal.
Right.
I'm in SoCal. But if I was here, I'd hide. These people who don't... there's places to hide. You know, I mean, I go downtown over here at the levee, and some of those people, they don't deserve to be there the way they treat Mother Nature, you know. I mean, I've seen junkyards look better in some of the areas down there. The way some people got it together really nice down there, but...
Are you a solo camper, or do you...
Solo. I am the lone wolf. Oh, yeah. I am the lone camper. Oh, yeah. Not that I like it that way. It'd be nice, but I'm reading a book a day, so I'm good.
Latest book you read was? What do you want? You're checking your backpack.
I just brought it back. The best beer run ever made. It was a gentleman in 1968 from New York City, went back to Nam just to see his friends from the neighborhood and bring him a beer, a local beer from New York. True story. Yeah.
You yourself are a former victim of the war yourself?
Hell no. No.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, I was a little too young for Nam, and I just lost my some of my best friends. Older brothers never came home, and I was a victim of the war, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sixth grade, seventh grade, me and the nuns were downtown Chicago. Hell no, we won't go marching. Actually, with some really cool hip nuns who told us how wrong we were to be in the Nam War. We told the truth actually, which the paper started to. What they call it, the first TV war, actually.
And we've been talking with, if you wish to say...
Raymond Wazowski, Chicago. Chi-town's in town.
Thank you, Raymond.
Thank you, brother.
This is your first day here.
Mm-hmm. First day in Santa Cruz.
What's your name, man?
J.P. Galvin.
And J.P., how did you make your way to Food Not Bombs?
Came to town, spent my last
Asbuck on the bus ride here and asked around, heard Food Not Bombs, and familiar with the organization, other cities, and y'all are the shit, man. Like, I really, really appreciate y'all. So,
How does it compare with Food Not Bombs in other places?
It's better than Humboldt's, but I cut Humboldt some slack because the cops keep shutting them down.
Really? Recently from Humboldt yourself?
Yeah.
When was the last time they shut down Food Not Bombs that you were aware of?
They've been like temporarily disbanded, and they come back and forth. They had a building, they got it taken away. I'm not sure when the last time was.
And it wasn't a regular meal for you at Food Not Bombs?
While I was there, no, because they kept, because they were shut down most of the time. But once a week they'd pop through, like the town square, and it'd be like the most nutritionally sound, well-balanced meal that, you know, I, and I'm sure everyone else would get over the course of a week, you know.
How long did you stay in Humboldt?
Like 3 years.
Well, what made you decide to wander on this way, if you want to say?
I honestly have no idea. I'm just trying to figure out what God's plan for me is right now.
And I wish you luck in that. What's your first impression of Santa Cruz?
Oh, I love it. I've been here before. Santa Cruz was the final destination. I had some places I wanted to check out in the Bay, and Santa Cruz was the last one that I wanted to go, you know, walk around and feel the vibe of. And since I've been here, it's been absolutely fantastic. So it's strange, like, being in a city with so much personality after coming, like, per person versus, like, let's say San Francisco. Everyone feels really rigid and robotic, but everyone around here seems, like, you could say, like, definitely has a soul and, like, their own taste and individuality, the patchwork, the button play, like.
Have you had talk with conversations with people who are, should we say, more well-to-do, you know, of the wealthier class?
I try to avoid them.
Yes. Well,
not yet. I've mostly been asleep on the beach.
A beach sleeper. And we've been talking with, if you want to say?
JP Galvin. Used to be John Patrick, but I'm going for Jetpack these days.
Thank you, JP. I'm Robert.
Questions about, you got food in your beard. I have questions about, there's gone, the city council tomorrow. What's up?
Well, of course, those listening to this will already, unfortunately, seen the city council come and go because the show is played on Thursday. But there are three things that I've noticed. One is military equipment, supposed accounting by the police department, which, according to Scott Graham, who listened to Monday Before Last's supposed required state public hearing on the issue, they didn't really give adequate information on this, and so that's something that people who are interested in police might want to check out. Although, by the time you hear this, as I said, you will have been too late to check.
And I may get into this, although I didn't stay for most of the discussion of the police department supposedly itemizing its military hardware and hoping and trying to get, presumably seeking authorization from the city council to have that hardware and or to get more. As I said, I'm not going to go into it now because I haven't really, I'd have to review it. I don't even know if I'm going to go into it on Sunday, but I may be able to interview somebody who did stay for some of it, though. A lot of the people got pretty weary as the evening went on. Maybe we're just not used to these in-person meetings, because it was the first in-person meeting of the city council in 2 years. Yeah, check it out. And even if you did, they wouldn't give a shit. But
then they're supposed to have the second reading.
There's also a second and final reading of the public gatherings ordinance, or the Food Not Bombs get the fuck out of town law. Although actually it's a little unclear, although not to Reggie Meisler, who talked to me earlier today, he said that it increases the penalties from infraction to misdemeanor for failing to obey the get a permit or get lost sections of the law. And also, of course, it expands the law of the state that
If you're there for two days in succession, you have to get a permit if you're there for more than an hour and you take up more than one quarter of the park. And since they've declared this area a park, that could conceivably have to do with food not bombs. But as you have pointed out on a number of occasions, and as I pointed out to Reggie earlier, they wrote you 2 months ago a letter from Cassie Bronson, the city attorney, that said, get out or else, in legal language, you know, with all the gentle euphemisms that attorneys use. And you thought, you know, you essentially ignored it because, in essence, you said, you know, if you have a problem, talk to us about anything in particular, but we're doing just fine, and how are you?
Yeah, so that's right. That's our position still on this issue. And but I just was wondering if there was going to be a time where the second reading was tomorrow, if we, because we have a Food Not Bombs meeting tonight, Monday night, and then I was thinking at the Monday night meeting, I would go, well, they're going to hear this, do the second reading at XYZ time, should we protest at the city council or not, because it's supposed to be the first city council where they're... You're allowed to go to city council. So, right. I don't know. I'm just trying, if you noticed that when reading of that would be.
It's rare that they have a time certain for anything at the council other than most recently oral communications, which I think is at 6:30. So it is possible for people to pile in even after that agenda item has come and gone. And, you know, you have to... they haven't really been too strict in enforcing, don't talk about that agenda item, it's already been discussed, you're too late, goodbye. In other words, only oral communication allows stuff not on the agenda, as you know. But nonetheless, food and bombs could be discussed. For example, you could say, since they have passed the ordinance, which they're likely to do, almost right. Surely they're going to do it, we urge people to be alert to the need to defend food not bombs in the event that the police make an unwise decision to crack down on food not bombs. I don't know if that's a wise thing to do or not. I wouldn't mind doing it. I may do it myself.
What we were thinking was trying to get people to speak during public comment or by either Zoom, if that's what they're doing, or in person, and just say that there's going to be a nonviolent resistance preparation on May 2nd, Monday, at 6 o'clock at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
I think you can do that. You can definitely do that in oral communications.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. Yeah, many people want to do that, can do that, it would be great. Cool.
And also, I mean, that the item you're talking about is probably sometime between 2 and 4, but who knows when.
Okay, cool.
What's happening here? It looks like a pretty mellow scene. You mentioned having some problems with...
Well, we had a lot of problems today. We had somebody broke the handle to the new trailer that we just bought, so we have to repair that. We've been trying to quell fights. The people at Los Pinos,
I was going to ask about that.
Got all mad yesterday, so while I'm dealing with that, then I'm trying to show Dredeye where to park the van and the trailer, and then he gets accused of hitting a car while doing that, while I'm having this intense argument with the owners of Los Pinos.
What was the outcome of the argument?
Well, he's supposed to come by and visit today, and it kind of seemed to be calmed down, but they started out with he's going to go to city council and get us shut down. That's happening as I'm having problems with Dredeye, so that was a drag.
I come in a kind of a calm moment. It looks like everything is
well. Because we told everybody that was having fistfights yesterday, they were going to call the cops on them immediately if they do it again, because I'm not going to put up with that, because it's fucking, I don't need the only business in the area to be pissed off at us. And it's not, we shouldn't be fucking with them. They're like nice people. So
what was the reason? What was their concern?
Well, their customers were saying they wouldn't come there because there was two people beating the shit out of each other in front of the restaurant.
And
screaming.
And this, you think, was an accurate account?
Yeah, well, definitely. Everybody, I was getting calls like crazy from here at the same time.
And we're going to take a musical break and hear more of this tale and how it came out.
Mother, what became of me?
wonder, Mother, what became of you? Now your child's become a woman in her own right, and she'd like you to know wherever you are that she loves you. I'll be honest with your mother that it took some time till I came to see the pain you must have known. When they took your child, it must have felt like dying. But I'd like you to know wherever you are that I love you. Now your child's a mother three times over. God knows that she loves those children so. Feeling them beside me now, I really can't imagine how you found the strength to let your baby go. How I'd love to see your mother just to let you know that the mom and dad who raised me well. And I love them more for knowing that they chose me. But I want you to know wherever you are that I love you. Now your child's a mother three times over. God knows that she loves those children so. Feeling them beside me now, I really can't imagine how you found the strength to let your baby go. Yes, your child's a mother now, she has a family, and she treasures them the way she does her life. And she couldn't love them more if she had borne them. And we want you to know wherever you are that we love you. No, I couldn't love them more if I had borne them. And we want you to know wherever you are that we love you.
And that was Mother, the last song we're going to play from Bulletin, the Tom Paxton album. We interrupt this record. Now back to Keith McHenry at the Town Clock.
So it was happening, and it's just bullshit, and it needs to stop happening. And here I'm, you know, we just cannot have any fighting here, ever, ever, no matter what's going on. You just have to walk away. That's the way it is, because if we get fighting... Oh, no, thank you, though. That looks beautiful. That's so nice. So he
can't walk away when someone has you by your hand.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your point, but we just can't have fighting here because we're going to be shut down.
But would you agree, when someone has you by the hair, can you walk away?
I think it would be pretty hard to walk away.
Well, especially when he was approaching me hella fast. Danica's boyfriend, and he was screaming at Danica and having a domestic fight, and my girl stood up for her and like, dude, stop yelling at her, da da da, and then he starts trying to fucking attack me and shit, and I was like, what the fuck, so.
Like a hard situation.
Yeah, so, yeah, and then the problem is that then I'm getting, you know, the restaurant is calling the city council to get rid of us, so I'm not into that. So we just can't have fights. No matter what, we can't have fights.
And yesterday, we had some other guy pull a hammer on somebody. And y'all want to act like I'm the bad guy when you got somebody else that lays on the ground there at times? And just yesterday, he tried to hit somebody with a hammer, and he was trying to threaten somebody else, and this and that, but I'm the bad guy.
Yeah, we're going to call cops and everybody.
I like what he did the other day. He protected Keith when Keith was getting attacked by Tony. Sam protected Keith. He was like, oh, no, you can't hit Keith.
Yeah, well, Tony. And
the man we just heard from was Sam.
Do you have a light, Joe?
No. When are you going to quit?
Okay.
So Sammy is your protector?
Oh, Sammy's our first aid guy. He saved three people from dying here, at least. Three people here from dying. And then he saved people from dying over at the... when we, whatever the last lot was that we were in before we got kicked out of that one. Yeah, so it'd be... But,
yeah. And from the town clock.
Yeah, we just got a picture. No one fights anymore.
Take it.
Don't believe it.
Having angry... I mean, the poor family was crying in tears, you know. Like, we lost all our customers because there's a fist fight out in front of our fucking restaurant. Yeah. But you can't have that happen.
So he hasn't. They haven't come by today to resolve it yet.
But I'm just going to go get some an horchata. And when I mentioned that I was getting horchatas from him, well, he calmed down a lot.
I see.
I feel bad for the day because I've been going over to get horchatas and then for quarters so I can feel the meter.
The which store? Which store?
And then we should. And then Joe, if you. It's Lapinas. And then if you could take the pots and put them on the ground so they're not blocking the painting. So see how there's, if they're empty, just and then put all the serving equipment in one in the top tray.
It sounds like a moving.
Is there food in there?
A moving train trying to remain neutral on a moving train is kind of hard, yeah. As Howard Zinn once put it.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation, but I mean this is definitely the best place to be of all the possible places. Because even across the street's kind of fucked up. Because then you're, you know, particularly weekdays. So I just went to St. Francis to see when they're going to start their daily inside meal, and they're saying they're not going to do it at least till June, maybe even after that. So that's like another 2 months we got to be out here.
What about the Red Church on Monday? Anything happening there?
That, I don't think anything's happening yet there, but they're hoping to sometime once they renovate.
Now, I see you move meetings from the Red Church to
the Resource Center.
To the Resource Center. Is that because of the Red Church doesn't want you there? It's too expensive? What's the reason?
Well, because it was free for us when we're paying $4,000 a month to be there. We would just meet in the room. But now that it's not...
Got a question?
Oh, there you are. So now it's not like that. So
you're leaving town to take a vacation. You'll be back. I think you're going to join up with Food Not Bombs again for a while.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to help out with Brent over at the service center. I'll pop in Food Not Bombs, get back in the community, figure out if Nomad can do anything, and see what happens this season.
Nomad, of course, was a group helping people in vehicles and at other points who are outside facing sweeps and harassment by police.
Yeah, basically just showing up in support for people in the community when they're getting at that line where the police are going to show up, because a lot of time I've been unhoused, I've been on the streets, I've had versions of the warning, and it's hard to process that with everything else going on, and having no one in support can be really like a detrimental situation. So we just want to come up and find a way to support people, help them move to a park or get information, logistics, or help show up. A lot of times the activists have a good rein on like the protest part of it, so we were trying to do more like bring water, bring whatever people need, vehicles to move.
Have you had much connection with people in RVs since then because of this OVO law that, as you know, is passed and is now being appealed to the Coastal Commission? It's an issue.
I actually had it. I had somebody a couple months ago ask me where they could park in RV, and I was well out of the game. I think the last help with the RV was down at one when they were clearing everyone out, like that was almost a year ago.
Yeah. Are you outside yourself or are you indoors?
At the moment, I'm indoors. My lease is up at the end. Well, my lease is already up, and I have a month. They invited me not to come back because I'm crazy and loud. So I'll be back. I'm out in 5 days. So.
How was your tenancy?
Pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I'm weirdly kind of in that place where I really appreciated being in a nice place and having nice stuff, but I'm ready to get back in a community that actually means what they say and not always stress about versions of rent or what's next.
Very good. Coming regularly to Food Not Bombs.
Yeah, I've been coming to eat because I've been a bit broker. I want to get back into the community, see people. Plan to jump back in and volunteer on days when they need. Have as many people, but it's just good to get a meal and feel supported yourself when you don't have like a mental health crisis no matter where you are.
Okay, well, I will allow you now to eat. That's the kind of guy I am.
I appreciate it.
We've been talking with
Robert Norris, Jedi Soul Nomad.
Thank you.
Good choice.
Mr. Solo Man. And here's a story from the Los Altos Town Crier entitled Mountain View's Vehicle Dwellers Face Uncertainty, City Faces Lawsuit. It's dated... hard to find a date. April 19th. Mountain View resident Harry Epstein has been parking his RV behind Sutter Health Palo Alto Medical Foundation in Mountain View for the past 8 years.
I don't feel like I'm homeless with this thing, Epstein told the town crier, adding that the city's policies with regard to when and where he can park makes him feel less secure. I feel ruthless if they're trying to kick us out because you want to be stable. In November 2020, Mountain View residents voted in favor of Measure C, which has banned so-called oversized vehicles from parking on streets that are 40 feet wide or narrower, and tasked the city with enforcing it. The city council adopted an identical measure in October 2019, but it was suspended due to pushback from organizations like the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley and the American Civil Liberties Union. These city's narrow streets policies are billed as serving the interests of public safety, but a class action lawsuit from several residents who live in oversized vehicles alleges that the ban is, quote, in fact designed to banish the city's low-income populations, unquote. The city is unable to tow or fine people for parking their vehicles on the street until July 4th, per an April 6th stay out of litigation, while the parties pursue settlement out of court order or agreement. Epstein expressed similar concerns to the law's allegation that the city and its residents don't care as much about road safety as they want to get RV dwellers out of the city. They want us out, period, he said. That's the bottom line. Making home. Epstein moved to the Bay Area from New Jersey, where he was living in a car in the 1980s. He lived with his mother for a while before that disintegrated, he said. I have not been living in an apartment or a regular house for over half my life, he said. I've been living in one vehicle or another, or no vehicles, or sometimes sleeping on the park bench. Initially, he would park in Palo Alto until that city started posting signs and restricting long-term parking. All the good spots were, you can't park here, Epstein said. The pandemic, he said, has made things a little more comfortable in Mountain View. Before then, police often asked him to move every 72 hours or so, but since the onset of the pandemic, his contact with the police decreased, and he was able to park for longer periods of time. Epstein has added to Mountain View's safe parking programs. He's applied to those programs and participated in some temporary housing programs, but he still finds his rig the most comfortable place to stay. I've been in a program or two before, a long, long time ago, he said. They put me up in a hotel with a bunch of seedy folks, and I said, oh no, I'd rather go sleep in the bushes. More recently, Epstein began to fill out an application, whether it's Epstein or Epstein will remain a mystery to me, of course. Whoever he was, he began to fill out an application for the safe parking program when the city began erecting signs warning about Measure C's enforcement. But he abandoned it when it became clear that seeking permanent housing was a mandatory part of the program. And even if he did get into so-called regular housing, I'll call him Epstein. Epstein said he'd still have to figure out where to park his RV. If there's one lesson I've learned throughout my life, it's don't get rid of whatever vehicle you've got to sleep in, he said. Epstein likes living in his RV. I was forced to do this because of bad health, he said. But inside, in my spirit, I like this. I have a mountain man mentality in my mind. I've never had a body that would agree with that and allow me to go off and make like Jeremiah Johnson in the woods, but that's the way I am. So this doesn't rub me the wrong way. Although he wishes residents would be more empathetic to people living in vehicles and on the streets, he's not too optimistic. I've been interviewed before. Other people I know have been interviewed, and what good does it do? It'll make nice reading on Sunday for them, Epstein said, pointing to the apartments across the street from his rig. But it's a personal thing, how they see other people, how they're able to relate to that, whether they have gifts of compassion or understanding. When the stay of litigation was announced earlier this month, city officials said, the city of Mountain View is pleased with the progress being made in the ongoing settlement discussions with the involved parties. We are appreciative of the additional time being provided by the court to continue settlement negotiations. If talks fail, the case is scheduled to begin trial in 2023. Thank you.
here, born in the slums of Bethlehem at the turning of the year. Yes, the turning of the year. When Jesus was a little lad, the streets rang with his name. For he argued with the older men, and he put them all to shame. Yes, he put them all to shame. His father, he apprenticed him a carpenter to be, to plane and drill and work with skill in the town of Galilee. Yes, the town of Galilee. He became a roving journeyman, and he wandered far and wide, and he saw how wealth and poverty live always side by side. Yes, always side by side. He said, come all you working men, you farmers and weavers too, if you will only organize, the world belongs to you. Yes, the world belongs to you. So the fishermen sent two delegates, and the farmers and weavers too, and they formed a working committee of 12 to see the struggle through. Yes, to see the struggle through. When the rich men heard what the carpenter had done, to the Roman troops they ran, saying, put this rebel Jesus down, he's a menace to God and man. Yes, a menace to God and man. The commander of the occupying troops, he laughed, and then he said, there's a cross to spare on Calvary Hill, by the weekend he'll be dead. Yes, by the weekend he'll be dead. Now Jesus walked among the poor, for the poor were his own kind, and they wouldn't let the cops get near enough to take him from behind. Yes, to take him from behind. So they hired a man of the traitor's trade, and a stool pigeon was he. And he sold his brother to the butcher's men for a fistful of silver money, a fistful of money. Jesus lay in the prison cell, and they beat him and offered him bribes to desert the cause of his own poor folk and work for the rich men's tribe. Yes, work for the rich men's tribe. The sweat stood out upon his brow, and the blood was in his eye. And they nailed his body to the Roman cross, and they laughed as they watched him die. Yes, they laughed as they watched him die. 2,000 years have passed and gone, and many a hero too. And the dream of this poor carpenter, at last it is coming true. Yes, at last it is coming true.
And that was Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall from decades ago. I guess it was the 80s, maybe the 70s. From a record called New Brighton Gazette. I don't think they ever put it out on a cassette, although maybe it's out on disc or in a file these days. A lot of political stuff, sort of hard left stuff, which I kind of like. I'm going to end this early because I'm running out of time if I want to get this up by 6 o'clock and not collapse with exhaustion as I stumble to get it put together. So If you found any of this of interest or worthy of comment, and that has happened so rarely that it seems kind of superfluous that I usually include this message, but I do anyway. Give me a call at 831-423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom and me. And it also is an opportunity for you to include some concerns you may have when, you know, you hear something you said here which you disagree with, or you think it's wrong, or you think it's incomplete, whatever. I'm interested. Or if you have some topics you think that need to be covered that relate to folks outside, or police abuse, or city council corruption, which is all, these are all matters of interest to me, you can just try me, and you may find me amenable. 423-4833, area code 831. The show is archived on the Huff website, in case you're having trouble catching it on the net, at the Freak Radio on the net site, because some people may, they've already let me know they're having some problems there. You go to huffsantacruz.org. You go to huffsantacruz.org, one word. Then you go to the name of the show, which is Bath Robespierre's Broadsides. And in that section, you'll find a link that says Latest Shows. Click on Latest Shows, and then click on the April 28th show, if you happen to be wanting to hear this particular show. And that's about it. Back at you next time, if and when we do it again. And talk at you then. My man, that a stupid job still
see what's going on.
Basically, you know what I'm saying? But I do. I see all this.
I see it.
Man.
Maybe if I was blind, then I wouldn't see my brother scheming. The streets dream for cream, tuck your chain in. You see him fiending. To blast your head off, it's not funny how a body gets lost. My brothers need saving, somebody holler at the wreck. If I was blind, I wouldn't see these young ladies with babies. At 13, you barely know what a dick is. You crazy, you bugging, you wasn't thinking. Plus, homie was only pimping. It's disgusting. At 16, yeah, he's only an infant. I was blind, I think this baby could advance. But he got babies for parents, was mama's wearing the pants. Staring out the window, she thought she saw your pops at a glance. Not a chance, she sees him in your face and your feet and your hands. If I was blind, then nothing like this would bother me. But a kid without a father will hardly grow up properly. Well, poverty, stomach pains can lead to armed robbery. So a kid becomes tough, they get locked up.
Maybe if I was blind, you know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't see y'all little motherfuckers
doing this little dumb shit, you know what I mean?
Y'all little girls out there.
Yo, y'all want to be pushing baby carriages?
Y'all so quick to grow up?
14 baby carriages, for
maybe
real?
Maybe if I was blind.
You know what I'm saying? And y'all motherfuckers, you know what I'm saying, want to die for change and shit.
Maybe if I was blind.
Yo,
maybe if I was blind, then I wouldn't see my people being tortured by an upper class that seems to need a bigger fortune, a bigger portion of the globe. So watch how you roll, cause they murdered our ancestors for gold. If I was blind, I wouldn't know this. I wouldn't see the Mexicans on the corner waiting for work. I wouldn't notice. I wouldn't see my man at X-Fiend trying to stay focused, trying to find himself a job, but inside he's feeling hopeless.
If I was blind, then none of this stuff would matter. I wouldn't be a mad rapper, I'd probably be a rich bastard. Then again, the industry might love that, cause then I'll be one of them and leave behind all that rough rap.
If I was blind, I hear Bush and believe him. I think other countries hate us cause they're envious of our freedom.
What freedom?
The freedom for the rich to oppress millions. Free to go to your country, pay you nothing, I get me billions.
If I was blind,
the oppressor will only be held down for so long.
For real, you know what I mean? It's time to stand up.
The people will rise forward.
Maybe if I was blind, maybe if I was blind,
the soldiers wouldn't step up.
But I'm not, my third eye is open.
Maybe if I was blind.
Maybe if I was blind. Maybe.
Maybe if I was blind, I would believe in the American dream. I wouldn't see the American nightmare. I mean, I wouldn't see the hardships and the desperation in the big cities, trailer parks, and Indian reservations. I wouldn't recognize the boys in the hood. We were warriors, now we're greedy. We've been poisoned for good. I mean, there's no more young lords, no more Black Panthers. All we have is the real, the fake, and the studio gangsters. I sweep these problems under the rug. I'd probably be a politician and fall in love with the blood. Money, I know about the homeless and hungry, but they don't fund me like the corporations do to put in blood. I was blind. But wait a minute, I'm not. I see all these things in front of me. But will it stop or living in hell? And angry is how I feel. If we don't get it together, brethren, I hope heaven's for real. I was blind. Maybe if I was blind, you know what I'm saying?
I see this shit,
but it's happening.
You know what I mean? We see this shit.
Maybe if I was blind.
I ain't even hiding it no more. You know what I mean? This shit is right in front of my fucking face.
I try to blow up everything, right?
So, putting this shit in front of me and expecting me not to see it?
You know what I mean? Yo, are we blind? You know what I mean? Do you think people are blind?
Maybe if I was blind.
Oh, my friends, if that is any one thing we must see today.
Yeah, yeah, what's that, what's that?
Is that these a revolutionary time.
True indeed, true, true.
All over the globe, men are revolting against old systems of exploitation.
That's right.
And oppression.
Yeah.
Out of the wounds of a frail world, new systems of justice and equality are being born. Churches and baffled people of the land are rising up.
Go ahead.
Never before. People who sat in darkness, have seen a great light.
Woo! My brothers and sisters.
Come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, yeah. We can.
All over the world.
Yeah, yeah. We
surprise
yeah.
us.
That's right. Yo, we live in
dangerous times.
Behind
enemy lines.
Design.
Bearing in mind.
I feel beat down. Sonic stutter sickening sound. The war cries, lost lives.
It's enough to make your world shut down.
In 6 minutes, yo, it's on.
Messed up the power bomb.
Changes up to the young and the regular folk.
Hard working.
Hold a hustle, bustle, everyday folk. The poor.
And so pure.
The have nots
and. Brothers and sisters. All over the world.
Rise up.
Movement.
We can do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's for us.
The whole world.
Given to us. The rich controlling TV.
Control what we see.
Make you think you're crazy and alone. Wanting love and peace. A simple fantasy we never gonna reach.
And lies is so deep.
From the book school teach. Destroy the spark early on. We're repetition.
You're not worth your network.
Skrilla got us all wrong. My people come together. Power singing this song.
Brothers and sisters.
Stars.
We can.
We can.
Yeah, yeah. All over.
Recognize power for the people. Sacrifice, stay alive, listen to your soul. Love, pass it on, strong you, here we go. Make the change, rearrange, give and receive. A change gonna come, manifest it and believe. Sacrifice, stay alive, listen to your soul. Love, pass it on, strong you, here we go.
Thinking of my niggas, rest every night, dreaming of my niggas, block controllers, my real church soldiers going out in a blaze in this wild street maze, gun the fuck down, banging for the town, hear the slugs fly by, see my niggas laid down, and when the smoke clears, see a puddle of tears, or a puddle of blood, from what life was, bang for the cause, fuck the laws, my niggas loped out, that's what it's about, or the fuck type life, niggas get your stripes, blaze a blunt and pass it, for my niggas in a casket, pour a little liquor, the streets get sicker, and all these young niggas will blow your brains quicker. And before a gangster, a flame burn hot. R.I.P. for my niggas that die for the block, the block.
Where will they go? What will they do? Your name goes on. We won't forget you. Where will they go? What will they do? Your name goes on. We won't forget you.
From crack rocks to Glock shots, everyday living. Consequences, but we keep on sinning. In the book of life, ain't a damn thing forgiven. But my niggas keep on and stay on the mission. My nigga Lil Slim, a bone, we keep missing. My bro, no toes and tones, keep listening. Brain damage, big red TN, my nigga nuts. Move Jib and Tiger, this shit was fucked up. Niggas fall from grace, go to a better place. My nigga Ty Penny, my dog Baby Lays, Nook Nook, Kenny Ray, the list goes on. I rep this shit, so your name lives on. From the bright sunrise to the darkest dawn, blood race through my veins when I feel this pain. So many niggas, I forget some names. Funerals crying and all the blood stains.
Where will they go? What will they do? Your name goes on. We won't forget you. Where will they go? What will they do? Your name goes on.
Won't you go out and bring Debbie, it's all I said. I feel I ain't gonna make it.